Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future we all hope for. Every week I'm joined by various members of the EV Cafe to interview people, but this is different. It's not interviewing, because John and I, hello John, you're welcome.
Hello, darling. Thank you.
Well, so normally we would speak to innovators, collaborators and pioneers from across the industry. Instead, we're speaking to an innovator, collaborator and pioneer from our very own EV Cafe, Sarah Sloman.
Hello.
Oh, it's very nice to be here. You missed out a disruptor, just saying.
Well, I missed out something deliberately, something that we may or may not refer to regularly throughout this podcast, because we considered doing this podcast in time terms prior to the 8th of March. But then we wouldn't have been able to talk to the Barbara Cox Woman of the Year. Woohoo! So
fantastic.
I actually phoned Sarah and said, listen, we want to do a podcast with you, but we're just going to hold on. And Sarah's like, no, I'm not going to win. I won't know. Sarah, let's start with that. How did that feel to be announced the Barbara Cox Woman of the Year? Very, very well deserved, which we would all say, wouldn't we? But really, really was.
Well, thank you. And actually, if you do watch it back, you can see the moment that the penny drops that it might be me at the point at which they mention local authority. But I think for me, the award is finally recognition of all those years of supporting people, mentoring people, trying to help people access the careers that they want to. And it's the stuff that people say, why are you doing that? You're too busy. Don't help people. Stop. It's not worth it. You're never going to get paid for it. Why would you bother? That is why I bother. Because for me, it's a collective effort. The more people interested in our sector, the better the sector will be through growth. And so whatever I can do to support people, I do try to do. I'm very open about it. So come contact me anytime. And I think that sort of shone through in my application. But also the Barbara Cox Woman of the Year Award stands for overcoming adversity. It's about people that have thrown caution to the wind and driven forward for their goals and their dreams. And I think, again, part of the application process is such that you get nominated and then you get invited to apply in your own words. And so that's how the judges decide who is eligible, and also pledging what you're going to do with that accolade. And for me, I want to use it as positively as possible as a platform. It's not been without its problems, though. I think the last week has been a real up and down process. I've had a lot of people be incredibly supportive, hundreds of wonderful messages, which I'm trying to soak in. But because we're sensitive beasts, the negative ones have really started to rot. And I've been so shocked at some of the responses around the sort of femininity argument, the male-female divide between that the award has presented. So this year's award was about hashtag embrace equity. And I'm really strongly considering doing a genderless application to try and find my apprentice or person who wants to come into the industry. Because if it's from equity, it's a place where it doesn't matter if you're male or female, what your backgrounds are, your wealth, your experience, your age, whatever. Equity just means not everybody starts from the same place. So let's give them that platform.
So Sarah, I asked you how you made it made you feel. It's interesting that we haven't got to that bit yet. And everything that you've said is really valuable and super important, but it's very factual. But it's interesting, isn't it? We got a little bit of how the negative feeling that has come out from some very...
Yeah, and the validation. I felt very validated with the efforts that I've put in being finally recognised. But I was completely overwhelmed as a feeling. You can hear in my voice in the acceptance speech that I'm wavering, I'm trying to compose myself. But generally, I think people that know me really well know that I spend a lot of time in a very happy disposition. There's not usually things that can upset me, but when they upset me hard. And, you know, this group, the EV Cafe team and wonderful people out there, you all know who you are there for me when that happens. And that is just invaluable. It doesn't happen very often, but it's like being... we were talking about it yesterday, a lovely puppy dog. Sometimes they're just so happy all the time. What are we doing today? We're going to go for a walk. We're going to eat. We're going to have a great time. But then when they're sad, they just look so sad. And I just think I'm a heart and sleeve person. You can always tell. You can always tell when something's wrong with me because I can't hide my face.
Sarah, are you somebody who doesn't quite understand your value? When I was at the London EV show, somebody who will remain nameless came to me and said, Sarah Sloman, talk to me about her. She can't be as good as she is. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, now, nobody is that knowledgeable, that nice, that helpful, that dedicated to the things she does. What's the deal with her? And I said to them, what you see is absolutely what you get. And they just wouldn't have it. It was like, no, you are the real deal, aren't you?
Yeah, I get that a lot. People think I'm always putting on like a smile or a front, like it's not a real thing. But at the same time, I'm not afraid to be grumpy with people or to call out something if I don't think it's quite right or that it needs to be aired. Of course you don't know your value, and nor should you. It's been an interesting process with the Barbara Cox Award in that sense, is it's quite overwhelming to think that there was an incredible list of finalists and I was chosen. It's not like other awards where you go, do you know what? I really want that. I'm going to put in for that and I'm going to get it because I know I am, because I deserve it. And it's based on this, this, and this. This whole process has been about a retrospective look back over what is now 20 years of helping people. And I think that's why I was so emotional about accepting the award, because whilst I'm on the stage with other people who probably in the chronology of their career is in some ways more deserving, I do stand by the effort that I put in extracurricular outside of work. And it's lovely to feel inside suddenly that a sense of validation about all that effort has paid off, and I hope it will continue to, but it doesn't surprise me to hear that somebody said that. Yeah, sometimes people think I'm sort of two-faced for the same reason, that like you can't possibly mean all those nice things and positive things you say about people. Surely, surely you turn around and say something behind our backs. Well, I don't, so, you know, at least you know. There's your face, there's your guarantee.
Yeah, don't you just.
Saz, and sorry, for those of you that don't know, we often refer to Sarah as Saz. I don't know if there is an A. Is it Sarah Ann Sloman? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's SAS. It's funny. I like it because SAS are sort of on a mission, but also SAS is in fact my initial. So I kind of go with it.
Good. Well, Saz, tell everybody a little bit about your career, because we've come in right at a pinnacle. You know, the woman of the year, Barbara Cox, remember, you know, but what has been the journey from way back then all the way up to today, as chief strategy officer for Patria, of course?
Yeah, well, those sickening people that's always known the value they can add. And for me, I always knew it was about environmental concerns. So even as a small child, I can remember crying to my mother going, I can smell the acid rain outside. And she's like, you live in Wiltshire, it's not acid rain. So it was a real early moment in my life where I realised I didn't like what I was seeing on telly about the environment being harmed. And I always cite the Rio Summit 92 because that was a pivotal age for me, watching that, understanding that world leaders were coming together to make a change. And then it led to quite a number of years of frustration because I wasn't seeing this change as a sort of young adolescent growing up. So it became a kind of spur for me to go, well, sod this. I'll devote my career through education to a position of change. And so it's the reason I keep saying 20 years is actually 20 years ago now, sort of April time, that I just got my first job in the economic regeneration team at Wiltshire County Council, because there was a connection for me between farming communities, rural communities, transport, logistics and connections that makes it possible for people to access employment, have a better quality of life and preserve the environment at the same time. So that's where the transport piece really kicked off. Then it was about teaching children to walk and cycle to school to save parents having to drive. And then that very naturally led on to sort of all sorts of consulting roles in environmental services. But the real pinnacle for me before this one was joining the West of England Combined Authority back in what was 2010 to implement their walking and cycling strategy with a big team of people who were all behaviour change specialists and working with employers to get their employees to walk and cycle more. And then, of course, that is that you're well onto the transport hierarchy then, so it's only natural you'd end up in EV. But fleet is where it's at now. I'm chief strategy officer at a fintech company called Paythrough, and the whole idea of it is that we power the electric vehicle chargers that are going in with apps and payments. But the reason I love the company is that we're trying to make it better for the end user. We hate the fact that things are disparate. We hate the fact that you can't get VAT receipts. It winds us up that the equipment going in isn't quite right. So we're using our experience and leveraging our networks to kind of get these amazing consortiums. One went live on Monday, so we're really proud of that. A Netherlands company's launched in the UK with our help. So, you know, we don't sing about it much, but there's lots to say.
Now, Sarah, you and I have both been civil servants, and we've spent a lot of time putting in policies and getting stuff done through sometimes quite slow and bureaucratic mechanisms. And we've both made the jump into the private sector. Do you think that speaks volumes about the civil service and its inability to get change made? And that actually, this is where it's now at. We've gone away from government because we recognise that the private sector is where we can really affect change most rapidly, knowing that climate change is potentially going to cause irreparable harm. So the only way we can shift that needle is to jump out to the private sector.
Yeah, it's a really nice moment in my career where I thought, I can't have this anymore. I love my job, I love where I'm working, but it's too small. I need to be more effective than this. And that moment was just after getting the Green Fleet Champion Award in 2018. And off the back of the essentially PR that brought, I was invited to do a dignitary exchange with the Dutch embassy. So 10 people from the UK went over, and I personally offered to host them here. So as an additional part of the programme, I showed the person all around the West of England and how woeful it was that this is all we've got to offer our electric community. And so when I came back from that trip and saw how incredible the assets that they've developed, and not just that, but how they did it and the speed at which they did it and how they didn't allow their government to hold them back. They did it anyway with private sector help.
Yes.
I quit my job a couple of months later and decided that I just simply couldn't be part of this slower process. And local government is where stuff happens, and local government's heart is entirely in the right place. They have a huge responsibility to do what we call business as usual execution of spending of the money, but also they get lumbered with innovation. And I think that's where it falls down a bit, because it's a slower moving beast. It doesn't always cope well with innovation, but then they make it quite hard to access the private sector that's so good at it. So it's a bit of a poison chalice in local authorities. They work incredibly hard. They don't get paid that well.
Yes.
It's hard to retain the talent on that basis as well. If you get offered double to go to the private sector, you're more than likely going to do that. So I think there's a lot of cultural shift that's required. But lots of local authorities are operating like private sector businesses now, which is great to see. And as a result, they're attracting more and more investment through central government and more sort of international projects where we can learn from other countries. So I'll never say never with local authority, but it would have to be something that was really impactful, or something that was a 3-year programme, something like that. But where I am right now, I've always been UK-based. I'm European now. I have great aspirations to take the company global with any skills I can apply. So I'm quite excited to see what the next few years brings, even though it's not in local authority anymore.
Okay, so shameless plug, Paythrough. Tell us about Paythrough. What do you do?
What does fintech mean? That's what I would like to know.
I love saying that word. It actually means financial technology. So it's anything that can, for us, we're a payment service provider at our absolute heart. And I often joke that we have to build the bridge just to cross it. So we want to process payments for EV transactions. So it's the bit that behind the scenes that no one will ever see. But in doing so, sometimes you have to build the app. So we do app creation and then process the booking and payment systems that sit seamlessly behind. The end user doesn't need to know. We were talking today about the future of EV and where we think it's going to go. And I love the idea that you could drive your EV to a car park where you're going to have to pay a car park company. I'd like the idea that you could do a car park and an EV charge and buy your train ticket and then maybe an e-bike when you get to the other end, like I did just this week for the Fleet News Awards. But I had to get the receipt off my other email account that I set up years ago, send it over to my work account, which I'll then have to put onto a spreadsheet. How nice would it be if it was all automated with the parking, the charging, the rail, the e-bike, and all, our job is to reconcile the payment to each of the vendors. You don't need to care about that. You just want to do your journey. Mm. So that's our vision. We want to make travel as seamless and easy as possible. But we've built quite a team now. We're all from the EV industry. So we're really focused on providing good quality apps that work and seamless payment systems that make sure you get the right money to the right place and you get the service that you need, which in this case is EV charging and parking.
It strikes me, Sarah, that you do nothing but work. But I happen to know that that's not true. Because, you know, I think part of the problem that many people have is that, how does she fit it all in? How does she do all of this stuff? How is it physically possible? Well, what else do you do? What do you do for fun? What do you do outside, outside of work? Because I know it's a lot and I know it's important to you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'll do anything to be outside. I fell asleep the other day trying to work out a way that I could rig up my laptop on a bike, static in the garden, because it would get the Wi-Fi and I could at least be outside doing something productive for my body and my brain. And my brain works at multi-levels at all times. I'm one of those people that's like genuinely listening, very proactive listener. I'm able to text back at the same time, be on camera, take notes. That multitasking is a blessing and a curse because it means I like to be busy. It's very hard for me to sit still. I've had all sorts of ADHD tests, so you know, trying to diagnose me, but I think I'm just one of those people that wants to be doing everything as quickly as possible. We talked about pace of change earlier. It's no different in my private life. I'm always planning the next trip. I'm always planning the next adventure, but it centers around being outdoors. I just live for being in the mountains, whether that's on foot or on a bike. I wish I could travel more. I can't. I'm a single mum right now and I'm trying to work full time, more than full time. And of course, we've got the Evie Cafe too. So yeah, the fun factor has dwindled a bit lately. I haven't done all the things that I would love to be doing, but they're so time consuming. Like if you gave me a day and burned my laptop, and please don't throw my phone away, I need that for all the photography, but I'd love to do a point to point hike. I want to start in one end of the Welsh mountains and just sleep wherever I end up, in a pub or whatever, and get to the other end and just get a train home. It would be just my ideal week, would be to like just disappear for a bit and just soak in that natural environment and chat to people. I met someone the other day who was having his dream day. He ran towards me with a big rucksack on and I said to him, do you want a snack? He didn't hear me. It was embarrassing. I had to say it again. And he thought I was asking for something off him. But it turned out he'd run like 20 miles and was about to go off to some waterfalls to cool his muscles. And it was all I could do to not be like, can I come? Because he just described his perfect day. And it turned out it was his birthday. And I suggested, well, we're all off to the pub later, you should come. And he just had this autonomy and this freedom in his life where he could wake up and decide that today for his birthday, he wants to go and run 20 miles with a rucksack and might go to some waterfall pools to relax. And there was an envy in that for me. My life is very regimented and it has to be able to deliver everything that I've committed to, both professionally and personally. So my day is planned within an inch of its life. And that suffocates me. I struggle with that.
It's interesting because I did just a couple of days on a thing called the Camino de Santiago. You must have heard of this, right? No, it's a 900 mile walk from Biarritz in the bottom of France all the way through to Santiago at the other end of Spain, all along the top coast. And you can do it in around 30 days if you really break your bits to do it. But is that the sort of thing that would be like really interesting to you?
I am a little less ambitious. I love feeling familiar. I love the British Isles. I love Europe in general, but that would require a lot of planning to do that trip. I guess that's what I'm thinking about. It's just being able to just go. And my brain is basically an ordnance survey map of the British Isles. There's very few places that I can go where I don't know the footpath or I don't know the layout. And I've got almost a photographic memory. I can study a map the night before in the pub and then be out and on my own completely, of course, with no phone signal, no GPS. And I can read the terrain and the topography based on the study of the map I've made with the isobars and the detailed look. It's really good fun for me. It's like solving a puzzle. I love it. So I would be out of my comfort zone. I'd have to plan a trip like that. But if anyone wants to take me.
Sarah, talk to us about that comfort zone, because you've talked about you've been very regimented and every second is accounted for and you've always got something on. There must be times when that really tests you and you think, do you know what? Stuff this. I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. Has that happened to you, or are you just this relentless rubber ball that never stops?
No, I'm really open about it. I even rubber balls sometimes have to be replaced. And I don't want that to happen to me. I really don't. I sat cross-legged the other day with my palms in the air in desperation, just crying out, because the pressure is self-applied. I want to succeed. I want to push. I want to enjoy my time and my life and my friends and my family. But there just isn't enough time in the day. And that is my kryptonite. I wish there was. And my brain starts going, but there is. Do this. Be more efficient. You can find a way. You can fit it in. And the worst part about this, John, is that I always can and I always do. So we were on the phone this morning, just before this podcast started, and I told you that a load of my friends who are all in the same professional boat as me often wake up at 2 a.m. for a couple of hours, and they're running through process in their head, and they're working things out, and they're creating lists and having ideas, and that's where innovation is born. So I don't hate that I'm in this strange sleep cycle at the moment, because it's really productive in the sense of driving forward. But that's why it makes me sad. And that's why my voice wavers, because it's like, is this punishment? Am I trying to punish myself in the name of this bigger mission out there? But I'm actually quite a small cog. And so it just comes down to the word I use all the time, and collaboration. Like, I will ask for help. I will say, actually, guys, I can't make that call, or I can't do that today. But 9 times out of 10, I'll find a way of doing it, and it'll be all the effort. So I hit my head hits the pillow and I fall asleep, but my brain at the moment is waking me up, because I feel we are on, it's so worth it. I feel the industry, I feel my business, I feel my career, everything to do with my personal life is on a pivoting moment. I'm moving through a phase at this point, and it's incredibly powerful to acknowledge that and not deny it, because otherwise it will eat you alive, or you'll get to the point of regret in future years that you didn't harness that opportunity. I saw something that said, if you think the price is high now, think about the price of regret later. So it looks like I'm burning out. It looks like I'm overstressed and my parents are concerned every week about what I'm achieving, but I'm not. It just feels like an absolute endurance feat.
Does this illustrate something about your past, Sarah, that you have to run at 100 miles an hour to be as effective as you can? And where does this come from? Because we heard in your voice the emotion, the tears are right there on the edge. Where does that come from?
Well, I know I'm an ex-perfectionist. I know it. I've always known that I can affect change and I can push things forward. I was on the school council, I was head girl, I was bus prefect, lunch monitor, I was doing charity work, trying to raise awareness for WaterAid, all whilst doing 13 GCSEs and getting A stars and A's. Like, I push and I push and I push. And by the way, I had my first job at 12. By 14, I had 3 jobs. So I was working before and after school and at the weekends. So for me, this level of operation is quite normal, but I'm not saying it's good. So there are moments where I reflect on how hard and how fast I've had to push to get where I am. And that makes me fiercely protective of it, because it means that I'm not going to suddenly just drop it. Like, my ambition for Paythrough is sky high. I really believe in them. I believe in the team. I believe what we're doing. I love the environmental sort of kudos that we can give ourselves for only working with renewable energy companies. Like, we've got something really special, and I like the idea that even though it's hard, because, you know, it's not a well-known brand at this point, but it will be, and it deserves to be, and I do not waste my time. That is the thing. I don't waste my time on anything or anyone if it's not worthy. That's not to say I'm going to dismiss things or people, but I will be weighing it up.
Sarah, throughout your life, you have been very determined, very focused, very, I want to say, in control. And I don't mean in a contrived sense, but it's been within your gift, right? You've been the prefect. You've gone and got that job at an early age. You've driven yourself forward. Talk to me about a time when control was not possible, where an event happened in your life where you couldn't control it. You were in the hands of something or someone else, in a sense. And how did that make you feel? And what has that driven your desire to continue to be in control?
It's really hard listening to the question out loud and allowing my brain to relax into a story, because there's no specific one time where that has happened. I've got a couple of major incidents in my life which are notable. One is having a premature baby. That was incredibly intense. Obviously, you as a human are completely out of control at that point. You just have to trust the professionals around you. And it's interesting, because I'm more than willing to do that. I'm not a controlling person in the sense of give it here, I'll do it myself, I can do it better. You know, I want other people's support and help. So in times like that, it's really easy for me to go, this one's not on me. This one you've got to help me with. Like, that little creature needs to survive. And then similarly, getting diagnosed with a very aggressive cancer. Again, the woman who diagnosed me said she's never seen anyone so happy to be told that things were in a terrible position. It was stage 4. That's as bad as it gets. It had left everyone always goes, oh, cancer is a terrible thing. Has it entered the lymphatic system? Meaning, has it spread? It started in my lymphatic system. So it was all over my entire body. But I couldn't understand why I was in so much pain, why I couldn't do anything I could do before, and why for nearly 3 years of going back and forth to the doctors and telling my friends and family something's not right, no one believing me, only I believed me. And then we ended up in a position where they go, here's your results. And I went, yes, I knew it. And it took a rib popping out from the size of the tumour that was inside my chest for people to see, physically see, that I wasn't making it up. I wasn't depressed. It wasn't postpartum depression. I wasn't unfit. I wasn't unhealthy. I was going to be in a very bad situation. But I hate the fact that it took it to that stage before people listened to me. So now I've got a real chip on my shoulder about having to say things 3, 4, 5 times, because I just feel like I said that, and then I said it again, and then I said it in a different way, and I still wasn't heard. So I think that if you ever see that aggression come out of me, it's probably stemming back to, I'm here, I'm asking for your help. It's taking a lot for me to ask for your help, so please help. That collaboration piece is a sort of, it's a cover story for we need to all work together to help each other and move faster. But it's just a wonderful word that makes it sound more appealing.
Wow.
Sarah, who inspires you? I mean, you're one of the most inspirational people I think I've ever met. But we all have people that we pull on to give us the energy, the direction, the reason for being. We learn things from people. Who's your inspiration?
It's you lot, you bunch of Muppets.
Yeah, well, we know that's not right.
It is. It absolutely is. It's you lot. I think because there's 5 of us and we're all so different. The last 3 years of working with you lot and the people that we've met as part of that process is undeniably inspiring. We all tackle things in different ways. We all have different humour. We all bring together something really special. But I'm not that sort of person that's like, I don't idolise celebrities. I don't idolise highly successful business people. I really don't have that level of admiration. And people who we've been meeting as part of this process, like we had Jordan on a couple of weeks ago, and I really did find that inspiring because she said something about being scrappy, be scrappy as hell, never give up, you know, and I think that's really important. And I talked a lot about having grit and determination and not being afraid of failure. So in summary, I think anybody who isn't afraid to, number one, be themselves, number two, strive, and number three, survive, is someone who inspires me. You don't have to be a CEO to be that person. I was at Fleet News Awards, and this lady right at the end, she knows who she is. She was just wonderful. And she said to me, I really have enjoyed watching your career, and I'm so inspired by you. How do you do it? And I went, I'm inspired by you. You've just put on this. How did you even do that? We just turn up for the last 3 hours and have a great time. I'm inspired by you. And if I can ever help you, I want to. So yeah, I'm inspired by people who actually care.
We care.
Yeah, we do. And it's been, I guess, to give people an insight into... Because I think people will be forgiven for almost in some ways being like, wow, in awe, stepping back from Sarah Sloman because she achieves so much. She goes at such a pace. But we also know the heart that you have for me and for John and for Sam and for Johnny and for lots of other people we do, you know, we meet. And that desire and that willingness to help is truly inspirational. Because you do take the time and you do invest it. And that warmth, that love, that care that you show to us as a team and to the people that come into your world is inspirational.
Well, thank you. And I would say for anybody who I am yet to meet or who I've already met, one thing you should always be sure about with me is I only speak when I mean it and I don't suffer fools gladly. So if you're in the group, it's because you utterly deserve to be there. And please use us and me and any inspirational energy I can give you, I will. So yeah, there's no falseness here. I haven't got time for that.
And Sarah, looking back, you know, to that young girl in her first job, I mean, kind of feels, I don't know, thinking through the question for a second, because, you know, what advice would you give that young girl that is ready to tackle on the world? But, you know, what would you have said to her? Because I think you've enacted it, haven't you?
Is that actually brilliant. It is worth telling the story. So essentially, I came away from a holiday and I couldn't buy the pens and pencils I wanted because I didn't have any money. And it annoyed me so much that when I came back, I said, that's it, I'm getting a job. But where I grew up was really rural. So you could just walk into shops and places and say, I want to work here. My friends were doing paper rounds and working their little backsides off for like £1.50. And I just went, I'm not doing that. So I walked into a shop and said, could I be your cleaner? And it was an outdoor pursuits shop. So it had guns and knives and rabbit killing devices and just horrific stuff. I used to get off the school bus and clean all of this stuff and just be like, this is great. And I quickly realized that I could earn more if I sort of served the customers, but I had to pretend to be older. So this just spawned a whole process of going, I see an opportunity, let's hunt this opportunity down. And then by 14, I was a key holder for aromatherapy and gift shop. We were going to Birmingham, the NEC show, to choose the stock at 14. Like, nobody needs to know your age. Nobody needs to know anything about your gender or where you're from or who you live or what band you like. It's about what can you deliver and being sure of that. And I remember saying, I can do this, just let me do it. Oh, you can't because you're only 14. Watch me. You know, it's brilliant to just grab the bull by the horn sometimes and say, forget it. I nearly became an interior designer on the basis that I love art and I love science, but the two don't meet in curriculum. It's very difficult to, when you're creative but also scientific, you can't choose to study art and science on a timetable. It just isn't permitted. So I had to make that horrible choice of leaving the interior design store, which I helped set up when I was, I think it was about 16 at that point. I was there for a couple of years, really inspiring stuff. I've left it. I've got no creativity in my life whatsoever beyond my strategic thinking or beyond the work we do on the EV Cafe. So there are moments I look back and give advice to myself, as I now do for my 10-year-old daughter, which is, I don't mind what you do, but you have to be clear and you have to choose your pathway and you have to stick to it. But I would say that was the only crossroads I've ever had in my working life, which was, do I want to go artsy or sciencey? And I chose sciencey and I don't regret it one bit, but I wish I had now the capacity to create that lovely creative space again in my life. But I haven't allowed myself to do it. I think my time will come.
Indeed. And listen, it sounds very much that if you put your mind to something, that it will happen. So my advice back to you is just decide that it will, and it will, because that's the power that you've given yourself. People like you don't just happen. People that there's invariably something that it has given you, that sense of focus and drive, that determination to own your destiny. What is it?
I think it's legacy. I think I don't want to be known.
Sarah, it's not the future, it's the past.
It kind of is, though. It is the future. Earlier you asked me about a walking trail that I might like, I'd never heard of, and I was listening and thinking about it. But when I visualize something, I want it. So now that we've talked, I've visualized taking a hiking trip, and that will happen. I visualize getting an electric motorbike just because on the EV rally, I saw a load of people on motorbikes on the NC500 and wanted a motorbike. If I visualize it, I make it happen. But where that stems from is very hard to define. I don't know. It's just a determination to be better at all costs. You know, what is it that I want? Visualize it and get it. I say at all costs, but at the same time, I don't lose myself in that process. I don't overcommit and underdeliver. So it's just a very regimented, I'd love to do one of those psychoanalytics things that works out how your brain works. I already know that it's sort of 50-50 practical and creative. I've done many psychometric tests that tells me this. So it's about setting my sights on something and working away at a strategic approach to my end goal. So the drive is not that way around. It's the thing you want that creates the drive for me. You know, I want that. So how do I get there? And the answer is yet more energy, apparently. Quite like a 37-hour day, I reckon. That's about right. Seven for sleeping, 30 for eating, drinking, working.
Come on then. If you won't go into the background and you won't go into the history, let's look at those visualizations. What does the future hold for you? What are you visualizing right now that you can and will, because we know you, deliver?
I visualize a very little girl who asked for a briefcase for her Christmas present. It was a lovely little briefcase. It was black plastic with pink clips, and inside there I put my pens and my pencils, and I threatened to run away from home And that was what I was going to do. So I'm visualizing working internationally. I'm visualizing continuing this journey of being a strong leader who inspires my children to also know what they want and to deliver their end goals as well. I visualize being happy, finding peace. That'd be nice. But for now, it'll just have to be progress until I find a time where I can go, I've done it. I deserve this. This has happened now. And we'll see. It wasn't that I wasn't going to go into it. It's just I racked my brains and can't think of a sort of moment in my time where I go, that's where it came from. Like nobody said to me, little girl, this is what you're going to do with your life. In fact, quite the opposite. Lots of people have said to me, little girl, you can't do that. I'm sorry, little girl, that one's not for you. I often tell the story about getting a job and turning up and they thought my name was going to be Sam and they assumed that that meant I was in fact a man. And when I turned up, they refused me. They turned me away and said, you can't work here. You won't be able to cope. I'm like, with what? And it was a warehouse operative job, not really a problem. So I've always had these moments in my life where I've gone, you don't say no. You don't say no to me. If you say no to me, I will find a way how. If you're saying no with a reason, I get it. If you're saying no with no reason, that is not acceptable. So why I can't go into the background is because there's so many moments in my life which have made me go, I don't accept that. I'm pushing forward and past you. And that's what's going to happen. Hmm. So that drive and determination isn't about hiding any stories or moments in my life. It's just been an organic process that's got me to this point where the sky feels like it's not quite the limit. I'm not sure where the limits lie.
But I think you've hit the...
You saddened. Oh. Can I, Paul, yeah, may yeah. I just, yeah, just very quickly, oh. Sorry, mate. You said something which has upset me. It's caused me pain. You said, I'm visualising being happy.
Mm-hmm.
That suggests that you're not happy.
I think it's tough. Happiness is a really hard to define thing. It's not something you can identify and hold. It's a feeling inside. It's like calm, content, not sort of tortured in any way. It's just that feeling, I think it's a peaceful feeling at peace, just feeling like it's all fine. You can rest now. That's not coming anytime soon.
But isn't that an inner peace? Isn't that a finding peace with who you are, what you are, what you've achieved, what you aspire to be? And goodness gracious, you have achieved so much in your life. Doesn't that bring you a level of contentment, happiness, peace?
Yeah, I think I'm ticking those off one by one. I'm finally very at peace with who I am, almost unapologetically so at this stage. You get to a point in your life where you're like, how many battles do you want me to fight? Seriously. And you can only do that with the army of one plus more. You know, it's just me asking for support. So I'm only going to elicit that support if I'm truly who I am. And we started the conversation with people don't believe that. Well, I believe that. I know exactly who I am, and I used to apologize for it or hide away or find a way of molding myself to make you or whoever you are happy. And I'm not there yet. You know, I'm very open about how important I think it is to have coaching, to have counseling. If you've been through anything traumatic that you haven't had time to process, I think it's really important as well not to lose sense of who you are in that healing process, because the first thing anybody does is go, it's me, I'm the problem, of course I am, so therefore I have to change. So inner peace, I think, is a quest rather than an end point. But yeah, it is difficult at the moment. There's a sense of urgency everywhere. There's a sense of urgency in the environment, in my job, in my work. Everything is very tight on timing, so that creates a physical urgency. So yeah, I think this is where it's very important to remember that creative piece. If I'm not experiencing any creativity in my life, I think that creates a bit of a hole and I fill it with practicality and tasks. So I'm trying really hard to find that and trying to sort of make this home really nice, and spring is coming. I might even try some gardening, although that fills me with horror. It seems very slow. You have to wait quite a long time for that to happen. So it's really kind of you to ask, but I don't feel inner peace is very nearby. I think I think I'm in a fight right now. I'm in fight mode. Let's see where we end up.
I think through what you were saying, it kind of gave me a little bit of insight, because I think when we come up against walls and we push through those walls, there's a sense of satisfaction, right? The satisfaction of achievement, of proving others wrong, of you know, you said, no, you can't do that, or you're not allowed to do it, or you're a girl, that's not, you know, it's not appropriate for a girl, or whatever, you know, however the thing is. And it's, I think that's what's been defining your progress, is that, and I think we've talked a lot about, you know, with lots of different people, that resilience is really key to being successful. And it seems that your resilience began at a really early age and has just grown and grown, and will continue to grow, because you're as scrappy as hell, as I think Jordan Brompton said. You're not going to let things go, which is exciting. So fast forward like 50 years or whatever, you know, to looking back at your life, what would you like it to say? What would you like people to be doing as they, I've just celebrated, and not me personally, somebody else's 80th birthday. I know I look 80, but I'm not quite there. You know, what can you imagine being said at that 80th birthday that reflects back on your life? What would you like it to say? And what, what do you aspire to?
I'd really like people to look back and realize almost the price I've paid for this progress. You know, I've devoted, in the true sense of the word, myself to this career and this mission for environmental greening and raising awareness. So I'd like people to acknowledge that. I'd like people to know that some of the infrastructure we see in skips around the place in 50 years' time were probably my fault. I'd like people to be inspired by the fact that it doesn't matter who you are or where you're from. If you've got the courage to set yourself a vision in your mind, even if that's something to do with an enjoyment piece for you. Like, I know a lot of people that are doing Couch to 5K right now, and I think that's a really great example. I'm blessed. I'm very athletic and active. I can run 5K. It's not a problem. But I remember when I couldn't, and how great it was to feel that progressive piece. And you mentioned the wall. I don't push through the wall. I strategically dismantle the wall and then skip over it in a floaty summer dress, throwing flowers over my shoulders. And then I set up a nice little tea party and say, come on through, everyone. I've broken the wall. You're welcome. Come this way. So I want people to remember that collaboration, because it isn't forced. It isn't false. It's worth it all the time. I'd rather be there with lots of people than just on my own. So even taking pay through to the next level, I'm doing that because I want us to be seen as a company that can help people, rather than just me trying to climb the career ladder. Like, it's not about that. I didn't volunteer to be the chief strategy officer because I didn't see a reason for it. I wanted it to be because in that position I could be more impactful for the whole company. And it's no different with my family. You know, I often do things that put me out of my comfort zone or another effort, when really all I want to do is watch Bargain Hunt and dunk biscuits.
Dunking biscuits and Sarah, watching Bargain Hunt.
I've been on Bargain Hunt.
No team. Way.
Yeah, he was an antique.
Don't
that was
make
bought.
Me go and get the sweatshirt. Sarah, if there was a book written about your life, what would its title be?
What a great question. I'd probably call it Let's Do It Anyway. It's actually not a bad chat. I think I would call it Let's Do It Anyway, because coming back to the visualization point, just because there's in the book, I'd like to explain that you have to be strategic. You can't just blast around the place trying new things and deciding what you do and don't like. You've got to have a sense of it. But once you have, and once you've picked your team, and once you've planned it and made sure that everything's in its right place at the right time, what is actually stopping you, apart from you and your self-doubt and your fear and your kind of the negatives of that, like this Barbara Cotswold people saying you don't deserve it, actually it shouldn't have been you, or why isn't there an equivalent for a man, or you do realize that you've only got to here in your career because of the way that you look and the advantages and opportunities that that has brought you. You know, these are incredible things. That is the tip of the iceberg of things that I've experienced just this last week alone. And the book would be about turning those negatives into positives, and seeing that actually opportunities don't just appear, you kind of create them. People often say to me, don't worry about it, it's fate, it's going to happen anyway, just forget. I'm like, you say that, But if you've prepared for something that you may not have seen coming, you can dodge it, divert it, leap over it, roll over it. You can get through things much better if you feel prepared. I'm the little scout with the backpack full of stuff at any one point. I'm that guy on these big mountain bike rides or whatever I do where people are flaking and failing and they're hungry and they're hurt and they're sunburned and they're sad or whatever. And I'm there giving them the stuff out of my literal backpack to make them feel better. So I want this book to say, It is a mission. Everything's a mission, but be prepared for that mission and you will survive. And wherever the mission leads you, even if it wasn't the destination you quite had in mind, being able to be grateful for what you've achieved and take stock of that and feel good about it is fine. But just because it's hard now and just because it hurts now doesn't mean that it's going to hurt forever. And forever might be a long way away, but don't panic. Just go with it. Ride the storm.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Indeed.
Well, thank you. It's so lovely to spend this time.
And I think that's the summary, isn't it? It is outstanding. It is just an insight into somebody that is leaving their mark on this world, albeit dismantled walls. I love that picture. Dismantled walls. Now with daisies and dandelions all cast all over them, you know, as somebody skips along. In there's something menacing about that image, I have to say. But anyway. But Sarah, listen, it is a joy to get to know you more and to help bring your story to life for everybody that loves us all on the EV Cafe and comes along and has the banter. But I think, you know, what today has shown is that there's so much substance behind the banter, so much purpose. And passion that is being deployed on a daily basis, not on camera, not for all to see, but talking to individuals across industry, promoting people, encouraging people, challenging people to do better, to do bigger, and to believe in themselves. Like you said, I think earlier on, you know, just believe it, press through. You'll do really well. And so, you know, it's with that in mind, Sarah, that we say thank you so much. And I give you the opportunity to say any final parting thoughts before we go and wrap up.
Just to thank you guys. I mean, we all owe it to Johnny Berry for having that crazy idea in the first place to get us together. But a phrase that I came up with and use all the time is friends first. We were friends first and business second, and long may that continue. I think for my next stage, following just even last week with the Barbara Cox Award and this conversation right now, here and now with you guys, my respected friends and colleagues, I am going to seek that inner peace a bit more proactively, even if that means shutting the door on a few things and a few people who, you know, who I love dearly, but at the same time are taking away some time for me to grow and nurture myself. So I don't know what that looks like. Sounds like I'm going on some massive hike in the south of France. See you later.
I'll send you a link. Sarah Sloman, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. JC, as always, thank you for providing some beautiful questions. Great chat. Hope everybody has had real benefit from that. Do check out paythrough.com, I guess. I think it's .com, isn't it? Yes, paythrough.com. Follow Sarah in her own right on LinkedIn. Always engaging. And you'll see those prolific notes that she managed to do whilst talking and doing a multitude of other things. But follow us on the evcafe.org and you'll see all the other podcasts there on the podcast section in our website, and follow us on LinkedIn and YouTube and all those wonderful places. But in the meantime, have a great day, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you.